Good afternoon. Let's begin. This is a meeting of the Title Setting Board pursuant to Article 40 of Title I, Colorado Revised Statutes. The time is 1:35 p.m. The date is June 3, 2009. We're meeting in the Secretary of State's Blue Spruce Conference Room, 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. The Title Setting Board today consists of the following. My name is Bill Hobbs. I'm Deputy Secretary of State, and I'm here on behalf of Secretary of State Bernie Busher. To my immediate right is Dan Domenico, Solicitor General, who is here on behalf of Attorney General John Southers. To my immediate left is Dan Carton, Deputy Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, who is the designee of the Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, Charlie Pike. To my far left is Maury Kneiser, Deputy Attorney General, who represents the Title Board. And to my far right is Ceci Gomez of the Secretary of State's office. Just some general information about our procedures. For each new measure, there are basically three steps that the board follows. First, in order to ensure that the board members understand the proposal, I'll provide an opportunity for board members to ask questions of the proponents. Second, the board will then determine if it has jurisdiction to set a title, and that necessarily includes determining whether each measure complies with the single subject requirement. And then third, if the board determines that it does have jurisdiction to set a title, then the board will proceed to work on drafting titles using a staff-prepared draft, a copy of which is on for each of the measures is on the table by the back door. This is a recorded meeting. It's broadcast over the Internet. If anybody wishes to testify, please sign up on one of the sign-up sheets on the table on the back door or by the back door. We generally take testimony first, and then a decision is reached by two of the three members of the board, and anyone who is dissatisfied with the decision of the board may file a motion for rehearing with the Secretary of State within 7 calendar days of today. We are not concerned with the merits of any proposal, but only with the setting of fair and proper titles. With that, I'll turn to the first agenda item. This is 2009-2010, number 20, civil unions. And if we could hear first from a representative of the proponents, if someone could come forward, identify yourself, please, who you represent, and if you, yes, I'm sorry, yes, to the microphone there.
Yes, my name is Joe Pearson. I represent this piece of initiative, and I'm with the organization Coloradans for Family Equality.
Thank you. Is there any introductory? I mean, I have some basic questions, but in part, you might just want to cover this. I think the proposal appears to be similar to a referred measure that was referred by the General Assembly a few years ago, but there are some differences.
Yes, the measure is very similar. We used that as the initial skeleton and added a few different sections just to add some different rights and enumerate some responsibilities and rights that we felt were left out of the first one.
Okay. And I think this measure refers to civil unions, and that measure referred to domestic partnerships.
Yes, civil unions is a little bit more universally recognized term.
Okay. Any other questions from board members? Mr. Domenico, do you have anything?
I'm curious how you view this. This is a statutory revision. It acknowledges, what's now Section 31 of Article 2, the constitutional amendment. What's your intent for how this would interact with that constitutional provision?
We feel there's no interaction. Both of these cover different realms. Amendment 31 of Article 2 refers directly to marriage, and that has been designated as being between one man, one woman in this state. And so this is just designating a separate institution in order to provide very similar rights, benefits, and responsibilities to same-sex couples.
As I read it, it provides essentially all the same rights and responsibilities other than the name?
Yes, and only at the state level, no federal benefits, of course.
Okay, thanks.
If there are no other questions, is there anybody else? I don't have anybody else signed up to testify, and I should go ahead and move into consideration of the single subject question. I'm sure proponents think it's a single subject, so that's, I'm just trying to figure out if there's anybody else present that wishes to testify on the question of single subject. Seeing none, then I'll turn to board discussion on single subject. As far as I don't see a single subject issue with the measure. It seems to me that it is a single subject, and unless I'm missing something, but
I'd agree with that.
I didn't see anything.
Okay.
Automatic.
Then I'll go ahead and make a motion that the board find that number 20 comprises a single subject, and that we proceed to set titles.
Second.
Further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then let's turn to the staff prepared draft, which Ms. Gomez is displaying on the screen in the room. Mr. Peterson, have you had a chance to look at the staff draft, and do you have any comments?
Yes, we had two main comments that we'd like to address. First is, since we did make some changes to the initial law, we're concerned about it referencing the Colorado Civil Union Benefits and Responsibilities Act. Since there were some changes, we're not sure if that will cause complications. And the second one is we find which consists of the union of one man and one woman unnecessary. And since we never had that specific line in our legislation, we find it just unnecessary.
Okay, so going back to your first comment, you're looking at lines 2 and 3, I think, and it says,
yes,
enacting the Colorado Civil Unions Benefits and Responsibilities Act. And, I mean, the measure provides that, but what's the concern again?
We just did have a concern since we did make some changes to it and was not the original as passed by the House, if that would change since the name was originally marked down as that in 2006. But if you find that there's no conflict with a few word changes, such as civil unions instead of domestic partnerships.
Well, I think the title would speak to the measure, this measure as drafted.
Oh, sorry, I did misread that. Yes.
Oh, okay.
So that's okay.
Very good.
I apologize.
Well, yeah. But can I mean, I don't know that we normally put in the title, what the act is going to be known as. I'm not sure it adds anything material. That formulation is new to me, I think, since I've been doing this.
It doesn't really tell the reader very – it doesn't say what's happening.
It doesn't add much. The rest of the lines 3 through 7 really explain what is going on. So,
Mr. Carton?
It is – for what it's worth, it is consistent with the language of the title of the measure that was referred to the voters 2006, which had in the trailer, basically, in connection there with creating the, quote, Colorado Domestic Partnership Benefits and Responsibilities Act, close quote. So it's not I agree with Mr. Domenico. I'm not sure that in my recent experience with the title board we've repeated the name of an act in the trailer of the title, but it is consistent with the language of the title in the 2006 measure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it really hurts anything to have it in there. It's just, and nobody really seems to do statutory amendments anymore, so maybe that's why we haven't seen this very often. But I don't think it does much to tell you what's going on. It doesn't bother me that it's in there, but I would probably take it out.
I think it would make sense to take it out. We'd just be dropping that phrase that begins enacting through to extend. I think instead it would say, and in connection therewith, extending to same-sex partners in a civil union the benefits, protections, et cetera.
Great.
So I guess I'll go ahead and move that change.
Second.
Extending. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. And then, Mr. Peterson, your other comment was, again?
Just on line 8, the consists of the union of one man and one woman. We just did not feel like that added much to the definition either, especially since we did not deal with the question or the definition of marriage throughout our legislation. But it's just a minor thing.
I wonder if, and I'm just thinking out loud here, I hadn't thought about this, but I'm wondering if it is helpful to help distinguish between the existing constitutional provision and just as you made that distinction in answer to Mr. Domenico's question, if maybe this helps reinforce that distinction.
Which is
I don't know. I'm just wondering. Because really, there'd be a strong line between marriage as between being between a man and a woman and civil unions, which is not, so.
Yes. I guess our concern was just the average person reading through it quickly, thinking this was dealing with marriage, so.
Mm-hmm. But once you get to the end, don't you know pretty clearly what this is?
Probably.
I don't know. I don't know what the other board members think.
Personally, I would get rid of it, I think. It is an addition to the text of the measure, which I don't think anyone disputes that that's what the Constitution says, but we normally don't explain, I don't think, how this is going to. We don't use the title to try to explain some other provision of law and how it will interact.
It's a good point.
What the measure does is provides that a civil union is not a marriage, and some other provision declares that it's a union of a man and a woman.
I would support dropping it in light of that. I think you're right.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's not a big problem, I don't think, either way, but I would probably get rid of it just to stick with describing what's actually going on in the measure itself, which I think the proponents accurately state doesn't get into anything more than saying this is not a marriage. A civil union is not a marriage.
I'll go ahead and make a motion then. Towards the end of line 7, change the comma to a period and strike the remainder.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any other comments, Mr. Peterson?
Nope.
Again, I don't have anyone else signed up to testify. Any further discussion by the board or suggested changes to the staff draft? I'll note that line 1 does not say concerning, as we normally say. It's a relatively short title. It clouds it a little bit to say an amendment to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning the authorization of civil unions. I can live without doing that.
I certainly can.
Any other changes to the staff draft? If not, Mr. Domenico.
There's one suggestion that that I thought it might be worth on line 3,
adding the word "all" between "union" and "the." Just, I don't think it necessarily changes the meaning, but it may signal that this really does do what I asked, which is basically in everything but name, create all the benefits, protections, and responsibilities of a marriage in this new institution. I don't know that it's important, just something I thought we should consider.
I mean, and I think the textual tie-in is subsection
105,
subsection 5. Generally, but I was looking at subsection 5, all legal benefits, protections, and responsibilities of spouses, including but not limited to a lengthy list, but that's not the exclusive list.
No. It's including but not exhaustive, so. We would be highly supportive of that since that matches how textually we wrote it, so.
So I'll go ahead and move that where the cursor is, that we insert the word "all."
I'll second it.
So that it reads, "In a civil union, all the benefits, protections, et cetera." Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any other changes to the staff draft? If not, then I'll go ahead and make a motion that the board adopt the titles as amended, with the understanding that the ballot title and submission clause, which begins in line 9 as on the version shown on the screen, that would have the same changes as well. I'll go ahead and make that motion that the board adopt the staff draft as amended.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0, and that concludes action on number 20, and the time is 1:52 p.m. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay.
Let's turn to the I'd actually like to take the next three agenda items together, if we could, for at least discussion purposes. Obviously, when we take action, we'll need to vote on them separately, but I'd like to take numbers 22, 23, and 24 together at this time. Similar language, I think same proponents, probably the same spokesperson on behalf of proponents. So we'll go ahead, and if proponents representative could come forward.
Can I just say I'm going to recuse myself on this for the reasons we discussed previously about the related measure on all three of these? I think the same analysis essentially applies. And ask Mr. Hobbs what he'd like me to do regarding the remaining agenda item.
I think on the last agenda item on the board procedures, I don't think there's any urgency on that. And given that, I'd rather you didn't have to stick around the whole afternoon if it turns out to be a while. Then why don't we lay that agenda item over until a later date?
No, that would be great as far as I'm concerned, as long as it doesn't inconvenience anyone else.
I think that would be fine. Mr. Gardner, are you okay with
that? That's fine.
Okay, we will lay over agenda item number 5 until a later meeting of the board. Thank you, Mr. Domenico. Mr. Gessler, if you'd like to introduce yourself and who you represent.
Thank you. My name is Scott Gessler. I'm with the law firm Hackstaff Gessler. I'm here on behalf of the proponents for proposed initiatives numbers 22, 23, and 24.
We can ask questions. Is there anything you want to tell us about?
Well, just two very brief points. Obviously, these three measures are in response to the title board's action with respect to amendment or proposed initiative number 15. And basically what these initiatives do is they focus specifically on the the fundamental right to vote by secret ballot for employee representation. So that's the first point. The second point that I would make is that the proponents only intend to submit one of these measures to, you know, for inclusion on the ballot. We don't know exactly, or at least we're not prepared at this point, to determine which one of the three will be submitted. But to the extent that influences the board's decision in setting titles, I know there's a concern not to make titles too similar to one another in order to avoid voter confusion. In this instance, I'd simply say that from the proponent's perspective, that is not a concern because we will only be submitting one of these.
Thank you. That's helpful. Questions from the board? Mr. Carton?
Mr. Gessler, just one question. Each of the measures, the first sentence of each of the measures says the right of individuals to vote by secret ballot is fundamental. And this was a sentence that was in a prior measure, number 15, before the board. And I think we may have had this discussion. But I just wanted to ask you what, and in measures 22 and 23, it's followed by, well, all three of the measures before the board is followed with employee representative specific language. What does the kind of the prefatory sentence, what does that add to the measure?
Well, I think there is case law, and I'm not prepared to recite it, and I apologize for that. But in some instances, the courts have looked and used the phrase a fundamental right. And I think there's an argument to be made that the term fundamental right, that something that's a fundamental right, is treated a little bit differently than a right. But I do know that the phrase fundamental right does appear in court cases. And to the extent, and I'm not necessarily saying fundamental rights are necessarily different than rights, but to the extent that they are, or to the extent that a court may interpret them, we want to be absolutely sure that that the right that we're enumerating, the right that we're announcing in this particular ballot measure, is a fundamental right.
Thank you.
Certainly.
That's all I had.
Let me just follow up on that. That sentence in each of the measures that reads the right of individuals to vote by secret ballot is fundamental. By itself, taken out of context, is very, very broad. But I think I'm hearing you say it is to be taken in context. What precedes it is a caption that says that we're talking about elections for employee representation, and what follows is an operative provision that's limited to employee representation. So is it fair to say this is limited to employee representation?
Absolutely. That is correct.
Okay.
This enunciates it in broad terms, and the following sentence is the one that creates sort of the specific prohibitions or on governmental action or the specific enactment of the behavior that should be conducted.
And how would you describe the single subject of each of these measures?
I think that the single subject is to essentially guarantee the fundamental right of people to vote by secret ballot in employee representation.
Okay. And my related question was, what is the purpose of the measure? But I think the way you phrased that, that's the purpose as well.
Yes.
Yes,
my subject was a little bit more narrow than oftentimes subjects are, but certainly the purpose is to guarantee those. The right to vote by secret ballot.
Okay.
And that is the similar subject. I mean, what we've done is we removed what this board viewed as objectionable second subject language. Essentially followed the board and the objector's instructions. The objector specifically said, you know, that should be removed. And this board, to our chagrin at least, bought that argument. But we did follow that guidance.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions?
No.
If not, then I have one other person signed up to testify. Mr. Gruskin, would you like to comment on the single subject? If you'll identify who you are and who you represent, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mark Gruskin. I'm with the law firm of Isaacs and Rosenbaum. I'm here to comment, at least, on the single subject issue. It seems to me that the single subject concerns remain, and there are two of them. Number one is the breadth of the language in the first sentence. Read in context, read literally, it addresses no limitations whatsoever. And frankly, notwithstanding the fact that there is a section heading and there are other provisions in these measures, this language can be read, and I think will be read, to mean that the right of individuals to vote by secret ballot, because it's fundamental, applies across the board. No such right currently exists as a fundamental right in terms of union elections, elections within corporations, for boards of directors, homeowners associations, I think was the example that came up last time. And there is no qualifying language in this provision. And it seems to me that once you go beyond the scope of this measure, the balance of this measure, you're affecting a significant number of types of elections. And the fact that we're no longer talking strictly about elections required by state or federal law, which was the previous language, doesn't in any way address that concern. My second single subject concern is rooted in the statute 1-40-106.5, specifically paragraph 1D, where the Colorado legislature embodied what the amendment to the Constitution, the single subject amendment to the Constitution, provided, which was that this was to be applied if the legislature, as it's applied to legislative measures. That provision says the Colorado Supreme Court has held the constitutional single subject requirement for bills was designed to prevent or inhibit various inappropriate or misleading practices that might otherwise occur. If the proponents are accurate and what this measure does is guarantee the right to vote secretly, what does that first sentence do? What does it do? I don't think it does anything. And frankly, there's no case law to suggest that the use of the term fundamental or fundamental right somehow is greater than an outright guarantee. I would suggest just the opposite. What the courts have said is that a fundamental right can be qualified by the General Assembly as need be. The right to vote, for instance, in state or federal elections is a fundamental right. However, it can be qualified by the legislature in terms of age, residency, and citizenship requirements, all of which are specified by legislation, and therefore that fundamental right isn't granted to everyone under every circumstance. It is granted only under those circumstances that are reasonable in light of what the legislature deems to be an appropriate regulation. Well, that second sentence in each of these measures provides an absolute guarantee. And I would suggest to you that a guarantee is broader than a fundamental right, because a guarantee cannot be abridged. A fundamental right can be restricted, and the courts have so held. And therefore, that first sentence is a way of communicating that this measure really has effects in the way people typically think of ballots and voting and the fundamental right to exercise the franchise. And therefore, the fact that the two provisions have been married with one another is not inadvertent and, frankly, does not expand the rights granted here. It couldn't in any way expand upon an absolute guarantee provided by the Constitution. But it is intended to mislead people to think that there are other types of voting, the types of voting they typically consider, to be covered by this. And I provided to you last time some website materials for the parent organization for this effort. That effort very specifically talks about both types of elections being covered by this kind of language. And I think that it is not incumbent upon the board to wait for a political exercise, that is a campaign, in order to find out whether or not this language is used to, as the General Assembly said, or used in an inappropriate or misleading way. And so I would ask the board to strike this measure as a violation of the single subject requirement and return it to the proponents so that it can be fixed.
Mr. Gruskin, let me go to your second point and help me understand that just a little bit better. It was my impression, and I'm very rusty, if not outright ignorant on this, that an important effect of finding that a right is a fundamental right is that there's a heightened scrutiny that is required in order to justify limitations on that right.
You're not that rusty.
Oh, okay. But I think, and then normally I would look at the guaranteed language as simply not necessarily getting all the way home. I mean, if you want to make this a fundamental right so that the legislature had to achieve that higher bar, then you would add this just to make sure that the language at the end that talks about guaranteeing that right, that really was going to be protected that way. But it sounds like you're saying guaranteed is stronger than fundamental right, and I'm not quite sure I follow why that would necessarily be the case.
It's my reading of the case law on fundamental rights that fundamental rights, as you point out, demand a compelling state interest. And the state needs to show that it has a significant overriding interest in order to address any sort of compromise of that right. That anticipates that there are potential compromises of the right. How can you compromise a right that is guaranteed? I don't think you can. And therefore, the notwithstanding the fact that it is a legalism, the fundamental right to vote has definite political cachet. And as long as that is used to somehow inform or misinform voters that this has an effect that it opponents say it doesn't have, that is that it is only limited, there will be plenty of voters thinking that this is about the fundamental right of their own fundamental right to cast their ballot, whether they're in a union or not, as long as they're partaking in an election. And so I think that, as to the second point that I raised, that this language is window dressing that has a misleading effect and creates then a violation under 1-40-106.5 of the single subject requirement.
And then going to that first point about that the language is broader than the measure, I mean, that was troubling to me walking into this hearing, because if it is broader than employee representation, then I think that is problematic to me on single subject grounds. But first, as a matter of statutory or constitutional construction, the context can be resorted to infer that it is limited to the context. It's a sentence that's sandwiched in between two other. It's all about employee representation, and perhaps that context would result in a constitutional construction limiting the application of that to employee representation. And second, we have the comments now of the proponents to that effect, and as you know, the courts have recognized that the statements of proponents can be given weight by the board, that is what they mean, and therefore it's now a matter of public record that can also be applied in construing that language. I mean, I'm okay with it in light of what the proponents have said it means, but I think I understand you to say, nevertheless, the literal language can be read by voters to lead them to believe it's something more than it is, or maybe. Is that a fair statement of your position?
It is, and I think... I'm sorry, I didn't mean to...
No, you go ahead.
I think it's important that the courts will only get to the issue of construing the language if they find the language to be ambiguous. There's nothing in this measure, that first sentence, in my view, that is at all ambiguous. The words themselves are really quite clear. As to the context of the measure or the comments of the proponents, those two are only considered if the language is... ambiguous. And in fact, in I believe it was 2006, there was a judicial term limits measure in front of this board, number 75, The proponents said it really isn't retroactive. No, they said it really is retroactive. And the court said the proponents' comments really don't mean anything because the clear language of the measure is that it can't be applied in a retroactive way. So the courts have isolated the commentary of the proponents as being useful only when the measure itself really is not capable of discernment through just a plain reading of the language. But I think here the plain reading of the language does not link this fundamental right of voting by a secret ballot to employee representation activities in any way, shape, or form.
And your point's well taken that there would have to be some ambiguity, but I walked into this believing it was unclear to me, given the context. So to me, I'd say it does resolve an ambiguity in my mind, but as I said to Mr. Gessler, I think if you do take it out of context and just the language seems to be pretty broad. So I don't know. I'll see what Mr. Gessler has to say in response. But any other questions for Mr. Gruskin? Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Gessler, would you like to respond?
And I'm sorry, Mr. Hobbs, could you please repeat that last comment you made before you said, I'm sure Mr. Gessler will respond?
I don't know whether I remember. I appreciate – here's where I think I am. With respect to the general principle that where we're unclear about the meaning of language, we in the courts can take the statements of proponents as evidence of intent to, in fact, I think basically the courts have said that in determining how to describe the true meaning and intent of the proposal, the title board may consider statements made by the proponents in the course of the administrative proceeding. NRA proposed initiative on water rights, 877 Pacific 2nd, 321, and I think there's some other cases. So in general, we can take that in helping us to understand the meaning of the measure, but that's where there's some uncertainty or ambiguity. And I think Mr. Gruskin is saying, the language is clear. It clearly is not limited to employee representation.
Sure. And I'm happy to speak on that. I mean, first of all, as a matter of statutory interpretation, I think it's quite clear that courts will look at language as a whole, not break down each word without reference to the words before it or the words after it or the sentences before it or the sentences after it. This has to be read as a whole. It's only two sentences that we're talking about. And I think Mr. Gruskin's the analysis is fundamentally incorrect in stating the courts will treat these as completely two divorced items and that one of them will have nothing to do with employee representation when, in fact, it comes under the heading of elections for employee representation and when, in fact, it is modified by the term or it is read in conjunction with the second sentence talking about elections or designations or authorizations of employee representation. It seems to me that the argument that the first sentence has no limitations willfully ignores both the second sentence and the very title, the very meaning, or the very purpose of this measure. So I do not think there's ambiguity, but certainly to the extent there is, I think we've been very clear at the outset, and including within the language entitling this elections for employee representation, and placing it under the miscellaneous category within the Colorado Constitution. I think you have to read this as a whole, rather than simply parsing out each comment and phrase in willful ignorance of the other portions.
Mr. Garten.
Mr. Gessler, Mr. Gruskin characterized the first sentence as window dressing that could have a misleading effect. And my question to you is what, and I think you may have answered this already with my first question, but So I apologize if I'm just asking the same question a different way, but what would be your concern with...
I understand exactly where you're going on that.
If you remove that first sentence.
I think, you know, actually as I was sitting down thinking about it, I think part of the genesis of this was the initiative, when you look at the right of initiative. I mean, courts have said that the right of initiative is fundamental. And I believe that's in Meyer versus Grant. I believe they use the word fundamental as well. And it has said, once the state doesn't have to grant a right of initiative. But once it does, it receives very strict First Amendment protections in a variety of ways. So the state can't say, well, since the court has said the state cannot say, well, since we don't have to grant you the right of initiative, we can sort of give you parts of the right of initiative. We can give you the right of initiative, but impose incredible restrictions on it, for example. And the Supreme Court has said, no, you can't do that, because once you grant the right of initiative, that right is fundamental, and it comes with a variety of protections by virtue of it being fundamental. And that's our point here. We're saying that the right of secret ballot and employee representation is fundamental here, that this right of secret ballot is fundamental. And I understand, I certainly understand Mr. Gruskin's argument, although we vehemently disagree with it, that the fundamental is superfluous because the term guarantee is something even beyond a fundamental right. I'm unaware of any case law that says a state giving a guarantee is beyond a fundamental right. We don't view it that way. And we think that in another context, one could certainly argue this, saying, well, a guarantee is less than a fundamental right. Well, there's not, to my knowledge, there's not a whole lot of case law, and maybe some can be found, on what the term guarantee actually means. But we think there is case law with respect to what a fundamental right means. And that means when you grant this right, and this is what this does, this grants the right to secret ballot, that right is considered a fundamental right, and so it prohibits or impedes the ability of the state to restrict that right. Now, we can argue as to what those restrictions may or may not be, and there's certainly recognition that no right is absolute, that it can never be restricted by state regulation. But using the term fundamental ties in with existing case law. It uses that same phrase, and the goal is to treat the right, this guarantee, this right of secret ballot employee representation, as a fundamental right, which accords it greater protections than simply saying than not including the term fundamental right. So we think it adds a lot, and we think it is critical to this.
And
I think
I would
proponents, I would argue, respectfully that, that the right of initiative is an important right in Colorado, and proponents do have the ability to advance those arguments. And we recognize that some people can argue otherwise as to the merits of this. But that, we're not here talking about whether a guarantee is actually something greater than a fundamental right, and that this title board should then make that decision at this point.
And is there, I would never presume to suggest how to write this. My question is, is there any reason that, for example, the proponents didn't insert kind of this fundamental language in the second sentence of the measure? So, for example, it would read the right of individuals to vote by secret. The measure would be where state or federal law requires or permits elections or designations or authorizations of employee representation, the right of individuals to vote by secret ballot is fundamental and shall be guaranteed.
So in other words, put that sentence second instead of first, or include it all in one compound sentence?
Would that change? I'm not sure there's a question in there, but...
I mean, I guess there are countless numbers of editorial decisions made when drafting any language. There's plenty of commentators that say sentences should never be longer than 20 words. So to include this as one sentence in its entirety would be essentially a huge compound sentence.
You made the decision to set off this first sentence from the sentence that speaks specifically to employee representation.
Well, yeah, I think obviously we made that decision. That's how it was written. And I'm not trying to be glib. Yes, of course that decision was made. Was it made for some nefarious, misleading purpose? I mean, I don't think that's a proper inquiry. But I'm certainly willing to say, no, it wasn't made for some improper, nefarious purpose. And I know Mr. Grusin's comment in saying the single subject was designed for misleading practices. And then he went on to talk about some of his other objections. But my sense was that those objections were almost treating the words secret ballot or fundamental as improper catchphrases, which goes more to the language rather than the single subject here. The fact is, this, as a functional matter, grants the right to secret ballot only in one instance.
Thank you.
I don't have any other questions. Mr. Grusin, anything else briefly? Okay. I don't have anyone else signed up to testify. Would anyone else like to testify on the question of single subject? Seeing none, then I'll turn to board discussion. Seems to me that it's a single subject. I appreciate that there may be other ways to draft it that might avoid some of the questions that we've been asking, but it seems to me that the language must be read in context, and the opponents have reinforced that the first sentence is limited to employee representation, and seems to me that the single subject is really, well, employee representation and maybe specifically the right to vote by secret ballot on employee representation. So I guess I would find that it's a single subject.
I'd agree with that, Mr. Chair. I appreciate Mr. Gruskin's arguments, but I do think the language of the two sentences is linked. I think that Mr. Gessler explained that to my satisfaction. I don't think that the language of the first sentence is necessarily misleading, or that there is an issue under Section 140.106.5.1d. And so I also think the measures.
Yes, and maybe one other comment, and then I'll make a motion. But I think with respect to the, I am trying to think through the comment about window dressing and is this intended to elicit support and et cetera. And I think with respect to the single subject question, I don't think that's an issue. It may be an issue with respect to how we set the titles that we would not necessarily, we might want to avoid, and I haven't gotten to this point yet, but make sure that we're not reinforcing the potential that voters might think they're voting on their fundamental rights to vote by secret ballot, whether or not they're members of unions. So, but with respect to single subject, it seems to me that we can find that these measures are a single subject. So I'm going to go ahead and make a motion. We'll start with number 22. I'll go ahead and make a motion that the board find that number 22 is a single subject and that we proceed to set titles.
Second.
If there's no other discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 2-0. Then let's turn to the staff draft for number 22. And I think Ms. Gomez is displaying it on the screen in the room. Starting with Mr. Gessler, have proponents looked at the staff draft? And do you have any comments about the staff draft?
Yes, sir, we have. We've looked at it, and thank you again for distributing it early. We're actually, I think, upon review, fine with this language. If the title board wants, though, I don't think we would object if you inserted on the second line after the word secret ballot to include the phrase regarding employee representation. Or perhaps in employee representation.
And I would like to see something like that, because it just, that's what my last comment was about.
Right, and that's where I sort of thought you were headed. You know, and so I don't think we would object to that. We'd be fine with that addition.
Would it, I'm not quite sure the best way to do it, would it, and your suggestion is a good starting place.
Yeah, I guess I was just included.
What
right
about
after that phrase, you know.
Well, I mean, what about the right of and in, right of employees to vote by secret ballot regarding employee representation? Concerning the fundamental right of employees to vote by secret ballot in employee or regarding employee representation.
The only objection I would have to that, it would almost seem that by it's almost redundant, employees in employee representation. I mean, sort of the heavy emphasis, you know, by repeating the term employee, you know, repeating it once, using it twice within, you know, seven words. So, I mean, maybe, you know, the fundamental right of employees to vote by secret ballot. I guess one could argue that that's implied in employee representation, and it's certainly made absolutely explicit in the next sentence. I guess I would fall back on right of individuals to vote by secret ballot regarding employee representation, because the language itself of the initiative does talk about the you know, it talks about the right of individuals concerning employee representation. That could be a shaded nuance, but I mean, in some instances, it may be an instance where non-employees get to vote on representation as well. For example, you know, sort of managerial officer class or contractors that obtain a certain number of work hours or something along those lines. And so I know the initiative was drafted specifically to use the term individuals for employee representation.
Any other comments about the staff draft besides that? Yes, Mr. Carton.
Mr. Gesser, would it be accurate if after, on line two, struck the "and in connection therewith, guaranteeing the right of individuals to vote by secret ballot," so that it read, "an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning the fundamental right of individuals to vote by secret ballot where state or federal law requires or permits."
Vote by secret ballot where state or federal law
required.
I'd be quite happy with that. I'm always happy to strike language when and but and I've never and I know Mr. Domenico's not here, but I've never been a big fan of the "in connection therewith" language either. But
it does remove the guarantee. Sure that.
Mm-hmm. I let's.
Fundamental right of individuals to vote by secret ballot. You know, perhaps, you know, it would be to include the guarantee language. Maybe you could say an amendment to the Colorado Constitution guaranteeing the fundamental right of individuals to vote by secret ballot where state or federal law requires or permits elections or designations or authorizations of employee representation. And I understand that using the term "concerning" is a and that's sort of standard practice with the title board, so I wouldn't necessarily push that.
And I'm sorry, what did you say, Mr. Gessler, concerning
an amendment to the Colorado Constitution guaranteeing the fundamental right of individuals to vote by secret ballot where state or federal law requires or permits elections, designations, or authorizations of employee representation? Because I mean, the only thing I would say is that the you know, the concerning language obviously expresses the subject, but then you still need either a verb or gerund saying what it does, what the language actually does.
And for a measure this short, I think we have sometimes omitted the concerning language and kind of said what it does. If it's
and,
a simple
and I
statement,
would be fine with that.
I like the way that reads, and it includes the guarantee concept. But my concern then is though that it recasts just a little bit the discussion. You know, we've had this discussion about guarantee versus fundamental right. The measure doesn't actually guarantee the fundamental right exactly. It says there's a fundamental right, and then it goes on in a separate sentence to say that this right is guaranteed.
I would functionally argue, and I understand this is I would functionally argue that it does guarantee that fundamental right. Because it does treat the right... Well, this right to vote by secret ballot is fundamental, and it does guarantee it.
And maybe it is consistent with Mr. Gruskin's comments that if guarantee is somehow stronger than declaring something a fundamental right, then you're guaranteeing that fundamental right. Maybe that does work.
I think it would certainly comport and satisfy Mr. Gruskin's arguments that he made earlier.
Okay.
But my only concern about this particular language right here is that it says an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning, and then it never quite gets around to saying what it does. That's why I would include
right.
the word. If you're going to strike out that full phrase, I would include the word guaranteeing, substitute the word guaranteeing for the word concern.
Well, I guess now I'd be troubled by saying guaranteeing the fundamental right of something, because that implies that the fundamental right already exists, and now we're guaranteeing it.
So it's sort of creating and guaranteeing.
Yeah. If that's a problem, you would be okay, I think. If we don't, I mean, you would still be okay with just saying concerning the fundamental right to vote by secret ballot where state or federal law requires blah, blah, blah.
Well, I do have one objection with that, and that is an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning, then we have the blah, 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 but it still has to say what, I think it still should say what it does. Because we're essentially saying here, you know, this is what this amendment is about.
So establishing the fundamental right of individuals to vote by secret ballot, et cetera.
Yeah, Ash, I was thinking the word establishing,
creating,
establishing and guaranteeing.
I don't like conjunctions for single subject.
I know, we're really getting away from the single word concerning. I understand that.
I appreciate that if you just simply state a subject concerning the fundamental right to vote by secret ballot, et cetera, it's not as clear that that's what's achieved by the measure. It's not just about that subject. That's
the
result.
It does something with that subject, yeah. So I mean, that's my concern here. I mean, perhaps it could say, you know, concerning the fundamental right of individuals to vote by secret ballot, and perhaps guaranteeing that right, state or federal law, and maybe remove the in connection therewith language.
And then we're back to my original problem, is that it looks like it's an independent establishment of a fundamental right that's not necessarily limited to employee representation.
I understand that argument. I guess I would disagree with it, but I certainly understand.
Would you want to go back to kind of the original proposition and leave the in connection there with language in and on line two, saying concerning the fundamental right of individuals to vote by secret ballot?
Employee representation
and in connection therewith guaranteeing the right of individuals to vote.
Well, probably at this point, my favorite would be something similar to that. And I'd probably still want to say employees instead of individuals. I realize there's a certain redundancy, but it would be something like concerning the fundamental right of employees to vote by secret ballot regarding employee representation. And in connection therewith, guaranteeing the right of individuals, et cetera. If we're going to express a single subject, I'd like to clearly say that it's about employee representation. And the individuals to vote by secret ballot begins to seem start the reader down this path that Mr. Gruskin expressed some concern about, is that this is about, oh, my right to vote by secret ballot.
Well, the one concern, and that was just pointed out to me, I mean, one concern we do have with that is my understanding is that in some of the variants, you know, some of the variants that are being discussed with respect to changes in the procedures would allow past employees to vote as well. And so the initiative is drafted, I was sort of getting at that a little bit earlier, used the term individuals for a purpose, because there could be non-employees who vote in an employee representation designation. And so the term individuals is specifically used to expand beyond employees. And so I guess we would be concerned by saying the fundamental right of employees to vote regarding employee representation. It certainly goes beyond employees. It does include individuals. It is limited to employee representation designations. But to the extent non-employees can vote, this initiative does apply to them.
So let me take one other run. Maybe this may not work. Concerning the fundamental right to vote by secret ballot in regarding employee representation, and just drop the individuals altogether. It does come along later in line three.
It does exist a little bit later. I think I confer just for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
We're fine with that.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess it removes him.
I mean, let's mark it for now. But I want to hear Mr. Gruskin's ideas. But concerning the fundamental right to vote by secret ballot regarding employee representation is kind of our working draft at this point. And then it picks up again, and in connection therewith, guaranteeing the right of individuals, et cetera. So if you're okay with that, Mr. Gessler, then perhaps I'll ask Mr. Gruskin for comments. Okay.
Sure, I may wind up here again.
Okay. Any comment? Mr. Gruskin says he doesn't have any comments. So I'll go ahead and make a motion to adopt those changes to the staff draft.
Second.
If there's no other discussion, all those in favor say aye. Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 2-0. So for number 22, we currently have an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning the fundamental right to vote by secret ballot regarding employee representation, in connection therewith, guaranteeing the right of individuals to vote by secret ballot where state or federal law requires, et cetera. Any further changes to the staff draft? If not, I'll make a motion that we adopt for number 22, that we adopt the staff draft as amended.
Second.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion passes 2-0. That completes action on number 22, and the time is 2:40 p.m. So we'll turn then to number 23. Based on the prior discussion, I'll see if there's any further testimony, but I guess I'll go ahead and make a motion that the board find that number 23 comprises a single subject and that we proceed to set titles.
Second.
Any comment? I don't want to cut anybody off if there's testimony on that motion.
No.
Seeing none, and I understand the comments that were made on number 22 are incorporated and are already part of the discussion on 23 and 24. Then the motion before the board is to find that the measure complies with the single subject requirement. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 2-0. Let's turn then to the staff draft for number 23, which Ms. Gomez has displayed on the screen in the room. Mr. Gessler, I suppose we could make a similar change to this.
Yes.
The difference, remind me of the difference between 22 and 23. I think
one uses the phrase requires and one uses the phrase
requires or permits.
Requires,
right?
Or permits.
22 said requires or permits. So the title would be the same, except that in 23, line 4, the staff draft just says where law requires elections. It doesn't say requires or permits. That's
right.
The difference.
And again, we'll only be submitting one of these, so the voters won't have to have their own red line version out to see the difference between the two.
So then I'll make a motion that the staff draft be amended in the same way that we amended number 22 concerning the fundamental right to vote by secret ballot, et cetera. Oh, I'm sorry, but vote by secret ballot regarding employee representation. That's a motion.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 2-0. Any further discussion or testimony regarding the staff draft as amended? Seeing none, I'll move that the board adopt the staff draft as amended.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 2-0. That completes action on number 23. The time is 2:43 p.m. Then let's turn to number 24.
And Mr. Hobbs, may I make a brief comment on number 24?
Yes, please, Mr. Gessler.
An expression of intent here. It's no secret that there are debates within the United States Congress involving the same subject. And if Congress acts, it may act in a way that brings it in conflict with this particular assuming this becomes a constitutional amendment provision. That may bring federal law in conflict with state law. There is also, I think, an argument to be made that that particular conflict, to the extent that the state resists it, the state will probably be on by far the strongest ground with respect to its internal employees and its internal functions, such as based on United States constitutional 10th Amendment concerns. I think there's an argument to be made now that conflict would be resolved, for example, under numbers 22 or number 23, that it could be resolved where a court would sort of split the difference and allow federal law to control private employers but reserve state control over state employees. What number 24 does is it just explicitly makes clear that division.
Thank you. I appreciate you pointing that out.
And so that's really the purpose for number 24 there. So with respect to the ballot title, the where it says including the state of Colorado and its political subdivisions, we think that's an accurate description that, the goal of number 24 is to sort of explicitly say that this applies to Colorado and Colorado's political subdivisions. So we don't have any objections to number 24. I guess that's a long-winded way of getting there, but I wanted to at least put my reasoning on the record there for the board.
Well, and thank you for doing that. And I think it's good to pause on number 24, not go too fast, because it is a longer measure. There are a couple of additional paragraphs. In my mind, it doesn't affect the single subject analysis because these are basically you're dealing within the single subject of employee representation, you're dealing with governmental employees. Seems like it still falls under the same single subject, in my opinion. But I would want to hear if anyone disagrees. But so let me find out if there is any objection to single subject. I think we've already had the discussion. Mr. Gruskin's already objected to all three. But if anybody wants to testify, seeing none, then I'll go ahead and make the motion that the board find, with respect to number 24, that the measure comprises a single subject and that we proceed to set titles.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 2-0. Then let's turn to the staff draft that is displayed on the room in the screen and consistent with the title set for number 22 and 23. I'll suggest that on line 2 we delete the words "of individuals" and after "secret ballot" insert "regarding employee representation." So that it would read, "concerning the fundamental right to vote by secret ballot regarding employee representation and comment in connection therewith, guaranteeing the right of individuals in any organization, including," and this is the difference Mr. Gessler has pointed out, "including the state of Colorado and its political subdivisions, to vote by secret ballot, et cetera." I'll go ahead and move that change.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 2-0. Any other changes to the staff draft? If not, I'll go ahead and move that that the board adopt the titles as amended. And I didn't state this for the other two, but of course the changes made in the ballot title would also be made in the ballot title and submission clause. But I'll go ahead and move the staff draft as amended.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 2-0. That completes action on number 24. The time is 2:48 p.m. And our remaining agenda item has been laid over, so that completes our agenda for today. Thank you very much. Thanks.